appreciate everyone coming, and I really appreciate the opportunity to get my thoughts together on this. And even if there are not thousands of people here, I have learned a lot about my project and thought about how we got it together. So I've learned something, and maybe I can share some of that with you. There are four points that I want to make, and I'm going to intertwine them through my talk. But I'll tell you them now, and then I'll tell you them at the end. But the first thing is to follow the advice that you get at grant writing workshops. It doesn't have to be specifically at one like this or for this particular call, but a lot of them say about the same thing, and if you follow the advice, you'll do a lot better job. We pretty much followed the advice on this project, and we did get funded, so maybe, I know that's only one replication, but it's still, I think it is good advice. The other is, I was mentioned earlier, to read the reviewer's comments, and I have here my reviewer comments that I got back, and you can see there's written on it, take them seriously. We took them fairly seriously. We made some major changes, and so we were pleased with that. They were good comments. Some of them weren't exactly right. You don't have to take everything that's suggested, but the major ones, they did pick out some issues. And then the other point, probably the first point, is when you type out that call, you read that closely, and I wrote on almost every page of this trying to figure out what I was supposed to do and what I wasn't supposed to do and try not to make any mistakes. But anyway, those are two big points. And the other thing is when you have a team, try to use all the skills of all your team members and try to not worry about the skills that everyone doesn't have. And then if you're the PI, then you have to kind of figure out a way to fill in the gaps and to make it all work together. But when you have a team, not everybody is as focused on the whole, and you have to use whatever skills you have. So in what we tried to do is, actually the main goal was an infrastructure goal, and you can see in front of you the map of Nebraska, our agro-eco zones on the western Corn Belt side, the eastern side of Nebraska there. We have about 25 to 30 inches of rain. We have rain-fed corn production. As you go west to the western high plains, we get less and less water. We're probably down at 14 inches of rainfall or less. We have wheat production, fallow wheat, things like that. And so what we wanted to do is have a project that would produce results that would be appropriate to the farming constraints across Nebraska. The reason I think that this project might have been of an advantage to this program is that our areas in Nebraska would be appropriate for states to the north, states to the east, states to the south, and the west if you take our agro-eco zone. We had a number of people involved, and I don't have a picture of everybody, but they were spread across the state. Nebraska has a system of experimental stations that are populated by faculty, and so the alphabet soup there has to do with where they're located. I'm in the northeast part of Nebraska, and the other ones are at different spots. The people there have different disciplines. Ron Johnson is a wildlife biologist. We added him based on our review comments after the first grant that wasn't successful, and I'll get into that as we go. I do want to give credit to these people. Most of them are co-authors here. David Baltensberger was the PI on our first grant, and this was one of the cases where David said he didn't want to write the second one, and we were over the phone, but he said, who wants to volunteer? And I was the last one to say, not me, so I'm the one who got the job. And I'm not sure. I think they had that planned. And since then, David has gone on to be department head at Texas A&M. So one of our challenges has been to keep the group together. He's had a replacement out there that's doing an excellent job on the grant, so that hasn't been a problem. But Ron Johnson has also left, and we don't have a replacement for him yet, although we do have a graduate student. Another reason I think we got the grant was we had strong participation from people outside the university system. Stephanie Newman is with the Organic Crop Improvement Association, and that's a group, but it's actually an international stature. They certify organic ground all over the world. They happen to have their international headquarters in Lincoln, Nebraska, and she was very helpful. She has a lot of connections, and they certainly committed to helping us get the grant accomplished, and I'll get into that too. Henry Miller works for one of those land grant 1994 colleges. In my area, Northeast Nebraska, we actually have two of those institutions, and we wanted to have some indigenous population viewpoints on our staff and help us, because his interest is going back to Native Prairie, populating with buffalo and things like that. Even though we didn't focus on that, we wanted to have somebody who had that kind of diverse viewpoint to help us as we went through some things. And John Quinn is a graduate student who's pretty much taken the position that Ron Johnson has in terms of giving us information about the non-crop areas and the wildlife. And Santiago Villanoa is an agronomy and horticulture grad student. One of our immediate benefits that I think we can be proud of is that Stephen Knezovic, our weed scientist, based on us getting this grant, was able to go to the Propane Institute of America, which I don't think has ever given a grant, you know, for production agriculture. But since we were going to do some organic weed control with a propane burner, he was able to get money, and now he has money for a graduate student. So what was about $2,000 or $3,000 investment in our grant has now become over $100,000. So that was an immediate benefit. And we didn't have Liz on our staff when we wrote the grant. Part of our funding is to pay her salary. But Liz Sarno was part of one of those organizations, or two of them, when we were writing the grant. And those organizations were very, very interested in what we're doing since we got the grant. We hired her. We got a lot of positives from the organic community by having somebody who is really knowledgeable about the organic farming techniques to be running our show, so to speak. And we have a lot of good support with technicians. Now, again, going back to the comments that we had originally, the comment was we needed a leader. Initially, our first grant really looked like chunky soup, I'd say. You know, there was potatoes and meat, but it wasn't a tomato puree where everything blended together the way they described it supposed to look earlier. So what we needed to do in our planning process was really go from a lot of individuals throwing their ideas into a pot to a unified program. And getting this project coordinator was really helped. I should also mention that we were able to get our dean to commit to matching half that salary. So Liz also has a secondary role as an extension educator. So she's fulfilling a lot of our extension work as well as running the program. And of course, that makes for better coordination if it's the same person doing the job. Now, here's a pretty simple timeline, the pre-grant process, our first draft, second draft. I'm not going to really get too much into the details of what we're doing in terms of the science, but talk a lot about the process and what we plan to do and how we're working it together. The pre-grant is really important. I've been in Nebraska since 1975 in one way or another, and I have a lot of contacts myself with a lot of those organizations that I listed before. A lot of those other PIs had their own set of contacts in that community. And so those of you may have taken Steve Coven's Seven Habits training or read the book. He has something he calls an emotional bank account. And so there was a fair amount of trust between us and the people we were working for and wanted to focus this grant with. And so that really helped a lot. And you'll see some of the letters and what they wanted to what they said about what we're doing. So, and I can't really tell you what it would have been like if we didn't have that, but the feedback I've gotten from some people was that really is important, that we had a long-term interest in this problem. We didn't just show up one day and say, oh, there's money there, let's go after it. Here you see a picture that I clipped out of a recent farm magazine, and the caption on that, if you don't read the farm magazine, is nobody laughs at a guy with a great cash flow. And I think the organic community kind of felt like this guy a little bit. I don't know how he feels, but I know how people would react maybe in Nebraska. And, you know, they just didn't feel like the University of Nebraska Extension research community was paying attention to their needs. And so they felt like an underserved group in the agriculture community. And we wanted, one of our goals was to change that around. The problem with identification was pretty simple in that when you start with a very small level of action, you know, anything you do is going to be better than nothing. Now, that's really not true in a sense. We've had a lot of work by individuals over the last 20 years, but we didn't have any really unified program that we could hang our hat on and say, this is what the University of Nebraska is doing on organic agriculture. You could say, this professor has a little interest, that professor does. We did for a while have a Center for Sustainable Ag Systems, which kind of fizzled in the late 1990s. Since a lot of us worked with this community, we didn't really feel like we were out of touch with them because we knew what the people thought. But one of the criticisms of our first grant is that we didn't really have any documentation of why we wanted to do what we wanted to do. So as we transitioned from our first draft to the second draft, we tried to document why we thought we had the different agroecozones. There are experimental stations in the Western Corn Belt side there in northeast Nebraska and in kind of southeast Nebraska. There's an experiment station north of where it says Central Great Plains, and then there's also an experimental farm where, right below Plains under Western Plains. And so we envisioned having a citizens advisory group to circle around each of those locations that would give us advice on how to do what we wanted to do. But I'm going to back up now. It's kind of hard to get this, answer all these questions and do it in a linear manner. And so since Debbie said that we didn't have to be linear in our planning, I'm not going to be linear in my talk. She's not even here to hear that, but what the heck. Anyway, what we did was basically sent out a fishing net and see who wanted to participate. If you note on there, it says Wednesday. This is a copy of an email that was sent out Wednesday, 5 May 2004. I hate to even show this because if you read that closely, it says the proposals are due the 10th of June. Well, I know they probably tell you in the grant writing workshops, don't start the grant on the 5th of May for a June 10th deadline. So, you know, but, you know, what they tell you is right because we didn't get funding. So this is, you know, a negative corroboration of their advice. But the point I want to make here really is that we send out an email to people we thought were interested. You know, we're thinking about doing this. If you're interested, tell me and you can be part of the process. So there wasn't any kingmaker really who said, I'm going to put this team together. This is going to be my integrated program. It was, we know there's 15 or 20 faculty out there who could be of interest. If you show some initiative and want to be part of the process, you can. At this point, obviously, we didn't get any grants, so it's all looking at a lot of work and not necessarily any payoff. But we sent that out. We did our work. We did get some phone conferences, and we did get a proposal in, and we started the process. And since I got the funding, obviously it has a good endpoint. Most of the time, I don't think we had any face-to-face meetings. We had phone meetings, but most of us knew each other and seen each other, you know, all over the place for 15, 20 years in various ways. And we've probably collaborated on things as before on one-on-one, but never as a team. And if you look at this slide here is a picture of an organic grain handling facility, the grain place. And you might not see it all, but there's some very new equipment there, and there's some very old farmstead buildings. And I don't think Dave Vetter, who owns it, would get upset with me saying that thing was put together piece by piece. It wasn't, you know, it wasn't leveled with a tornado or something, and then he built his facility. He was adding on as he went, and it kind of grew from a humble beginnings, and that's kind of how our team was as well. Okay, stakeholder input. You don't have to read that whole email, but we went to the Nebraska Sustainable Ag Society, which is the premier sustainable farm group in the state. I don't know how many people are on their listserv, but probably close to 100 or more. And we basically said we need documentation. I highlight here one of the lines. One portion of the reviewer's response was the need for documentation of the need for research in Nebraska. So we went to them. We asked to do a survey. It was a very quick survey. Who are you? And then what are the issues that you had when you were converting? What's important now? What kind of research do you want to see later on? And this is just one of the answers. And I got a number of answers by email, a number of answers in the mail. But weed control, fertility, bottom line, some of them were a little different than this, of course. But this is the kind of answer we got. And we based what we received here. We used that for some of the specific research that we wanted to do. Now, I haven't actually mentioned that. Well, I guess I did mention we had those four sites, but the main objective of what we as researchers wanted to do was to put certified organic land on at those four experiment stations. And our first go-round, we weren't real specific about what research we would do. We kind of gave general ideas. We'd do fertility work, weed control, and it was kind of fuzzy. And we didn't get to a real specific experiment. So this second time round, we wanted to prioritize what experiments we'd do where. Well, in addition to that survey, we also asked for letters. This happens to be one from the original grant, but they didn't really change anything in the second go-round. This is the certifying agency, and they said they would help. The one thing I really think was strong about our grant was that we had a lot of very good letters. I mean, I've been on grants where the cooperators say, I know Dr. Shapiro, he's a great guy, and I'll work with him. Thank you very much. I support what he's doing. Well, here you can see there's a lot of specificity in what they're going to do. And if you can read down there, that says that OCI will require $25 an hour to help out. So we didn't have a problem with this. We thought that we had resources, and if they're going to be investing time and energy, then we should they should get some remuneration. So we had that. The Nebraska Society, Agricultural Society, again, was going to help us find sites. And again, they wrote a fairly long letter explaining what they specifically wanted to do and how they were going to help us. And so that was a lot of help. And here again, I don't have to read the details. I just want to show that, again, the Nebraska Indian Community College was involved, and they were committed to helping us in specific ways. So each of these letters had a specific point to it. I'm going to run through the goals and just talk a little bit about them, not necessarily from the science aspect, but just sign of the comment. We had three big objectives. The first one here is developing those four major research stations. Now, underlying our desire to get those certified organic areas was the general agreement that we didn't want to do research comparing one system to another. A lot of people spend a lot of time arguing over, you know, which is better, what, blah, blah, blah. We wanted to go beyond that and say we have a community out there who wants us to help them find answers to problems that they have. And so we want to focus on finding answers to those problems. And that's the way I explain it to the people in the department who may not think what we're doing is the best. But, you know, we're just focused on answering questions, just kind of like was said earlier, that there has to be an issue to resolve. So we couldn't answer any questions if we don't have any land to answer the questions on. And we didn't really want to create this land just for ourselves. We have about 15, 20 other faculty members who weren't involved in writing the grant, but who said if there is organically certified land, we would be interested in writing further grants to do work that was specifically designed to answer those communities. Questions. And so that is our major goal here. This last one that's underlined, develop methods to assess environmental concerns. We added that. That was something that the reviewers also said we needed to add. Again, we were focused on getting this land, and we really didn't have the broader picture. And so by adding this concern, we added another researcher, and he added a graduate student. And so they came up with the idea of a healthy farm index, and they were going to look at specifically birds, because that's what Ron Johnson, that's his expertise. But we've also are looking at some insect indicators and soil indicators, soil erosion, and other issues so that we can make some kind of assessment of what the big picture effect on the environment would be if one changes to organic farming, or some way of measuring the differences. And Ron has done work on comparing organic to non-organic farms before, so this would be a continuation of some of his work. The second objective was specific, what some people would say is, you know, component research, or the actual objectives, a specific researchable objective. And one of the things that producers have told us in those surveys and other places is they want crop varieties that are better suited to the conditions in which organic crops are grown. And Dave Baltensberger, that's his expertise, so he was going to take responsibility for that. We already had a variety testing program for conventional crops in the state, and most of the locations would have had conventional variety testing going on anyway, so this would be would have been a natural thing to add. And then we also had ideas for some of those other things on there. I'm not going to go into too detail. On the third objective is where we integrated our extension and teaching results. We wanted, our idea was not to just have organic farming classes, but to try to get all the professors who are teaching to include something about organics or the environment or the agroecological principles in their courses. Chuck Francis already was teaching at least two, maybe three courses. Ron Johnson was including some things in his courses, and Jim Brandel in forestry also had an interest in that. And so they're taking leadership on the teaching. For the extension, we knew, and Liz has told us continually, you know, that the organic farming community doesn't really feel comfortable with the way that the university extends itself. They don't want to read our NEB guides. They don't want to come to the classes for whatever reason. They've been burned before, maybe. But so we need to develop a new way of contacting that clientele. And I can't stand up here and say we got that covered, but it's been a really good relationship between us and Liz, because Liz really lives and breathes the organic farmer mentality, and she's learning a lot about the researchers, and she's trying to get us. We're slow to change, but we're trying to understand what's important to her and try to come up with some things that'll work. Okay, so our big scheme was this diagram. Mainly it's for our own use in terms of each one of those boxes is a site location. I'm at the Northeast Center. Since I'm a soil fertility person, I take responsibility for that. Steven was doing the weeds and going through the different areas. That's where things would start, but it's not necessarily that that's going to be the way everything works as we go through this. And then above that, we had the healthy farm index and looking at the agroecozone interpretation. But for 3 years, as you know, it takes 3 years to transition to being certified organic. So for most of us, the last 2 or 3 years has been just learning how to farm these areas appropriately. How do we maintain our collaboration? And maintaining collaboration, maintaining teamwork, building teamwork, to me, they're all kind of mixed together. Liz likes to provide food, and she likes to share a meal, and most of us like to join her and eat too. And Dave Vetter, who's has the beard and white hair in the front there, he's with the Grain Place. He's been an organic farmer, organic food processor for probably close to 30 years. We just had a tour of his place, and we looked at the way he handles food, but also his farm manager is also an excellent organic farmer, so we were out there looking at his equipment. So not only are we learning from the farmers, we're also together learning together the different technicians and researchers. So that's one of the things we do. This, of course, was after we got the grant, but we knew we would have to do that when we started, and that's why we had a citizens advisory group formed. We use our collaborators whenever possible to find members who will help out, and when they want something, they come to us. We try to write for their newsletters. The Grain Place has annual field day, and they invite us to talk there. And so we still keep that up. I think we could do a better job of that, but we're trying. And one of the things that Liz has done, which I think is excellent, is she's gone to the NSAS, the OCI membership, and got mentors for our technicians. We hired a person who's our organic farming specialist at where I work, and he's gone to three or four different farms that are practicing so he could learn about the equipment, learn about all the things, and if he has a question, he can call them. And so I think they appreciate the fact that we go to them for some knowledge. The Center for Rural Affairs is more involved in policy, and so we go to them for policy issues. They also have a very extensive website and newsletter, so we can put things in there to communicate. The Grain Place is a really big, successful, a good example of a small business that has just established itself over the last couple of decades, and they are now working to get their food in the university dining hall and things like that. So we have good collaboration with them. Here we are at one of the lessons that we learned out there at the Grain Place, and we've been other places. I just happened to put that slide in there. We meet monthly by a conference call. Liz, as an extension educator, has to write a monthly report, which we circulate to everybody in the group so they know what she's doing. We don't always have everybody on the phone call like was mentioned previously, but email is great, and we try to cover as much ground as possible that way. And here's just the Citizens Advisory Group. We meet as much as we can, and they give us advice. We've had a lot of challenges. I think some of them have been real good. Some of them have been maybe not so good, but the big thing really is getting the grant done on time and trying to have enough money to do what you want to do. There's just a lot of unexpected expenses that you don't think about. One big thing was in order to farm organically, you need equipment that's clean, and you can clean a combine every time you go from one field to another, or a cultivator, something like that, but it's a lot easier in the thick of battle to just have your own equipment. And so we really thought at the beginning we would just clean things as needed. We do have a full line of equipment at these research centers, but we ended up buying an old combine. We ended up buying an old cultivator from, you know, other money to make things work, because the technicians, they don't want to be doing things they think they don't need to do. So we've tried to worry about the money a little bit. Another issue from the scientific side is what kind of data set do we need to collect during this three-year transition? It's not really part of a research project, so it's not really going to go into a refereed journal article, which is what most of my colleagues count as success. So how much do we take just for background data? As a soils person, I might have 20 things, but I can't call up and tell people 300 miles away, this is the soils I want you to collect. So there's some issues there. The same thing with the entomologist. He's not going to be able to collect beneficial insects every week at four sites. If we had a specific grant to do that, that'd be one thing. So we've struggled with what data is really important during this transition period. One issue we had was just dealing with the local noxious weed board. We put up some signs and sent him a letter. We thought it was a very nice, you know, matter-of-fact business letter, but he'd never gotten a letter like that before, and he kind of went ballistic. And, you know, you just have to learn how to hold hands and smile and do what you need to do to unruffle some feathers. But those are the kind of things that happen. I just can give you one example here of the of what we learned from our advisory committee. This is just north of where I work. The yellow line encompasses where the initial organic area was, and we showed this to the farmers we met in one of the buildings there on site, and we gave them an idea of what we were going to do. And the list up in front of you tells what they told us. They said, you know, you can't just have crops. If you want to have really an organic area, you need to add livestock. you need to keep track of the drainage, because a lot of these farmers had neighbors who had drainage issues from their neighbors. The water would come off and go onto their land, and that they couldn't get certified unless they solved that issue. It happened, luckily, you can't really tell here too well, but we do have a drainage around there, and so that wouldn't have been, isn't an issue for us, but it is one that they wanted us to document. They were interested in the nutrient flows, you know, how much manure we're putting on in our, let's see here. Over here we have a livestock facility. We have a beef specialist, and we could overpower this organic farm with all the manure from that feedlot, because we only have 25 acres there, and he has, I don't know, a couple hundred head of beef cattle. So what we wanted to do is make sure that we only use the appropriate and typical amount of manure that would be available to a farmer who might have a smaller set of land. So we needed to keep track of that. And then they had some concerns about our rotation. And there you see the separate equipment is best. They impressed that on us, and that's why we ended up buying those other pieces of equipment. But we implemented all that and changed it because of their input, so we appreciate that. And here's kind of a view from my office window. You can see the cows are out there. It happens that our technician had a little cow herd of his own and was willing to fence that off and provide water for a few weeks. So it really worked out great. And in fact, you know, he's thinking, well, maybe he should get those cows certified organic, since they're eating organic food anyway and they're on pasture most of the other year. So we might have created a new organic livestock person out of this, which unintended consequences. And then we tried to get as much credit to the producers who we were working with. Even though we got the grant, we tried to highlight producers who are already in the field. That helps get the word out. This is from the Standard Nebraska Farmer, which goes to almost every conventional farmer. So anytime you can, get some publicity and reach people who aren't of the same philosophical approach, that helps as well. So I'm going to end here with this slide. This is what I started with, the 4 points. Follow the advice you get at the grant writing workshops. The one thing I did not say yet was in our university, they say if you can get the grant in 4 weeks before it's due and wherever, they will hire a grant editor, writer to look it over to make sure that our I's are dotted and T's crossed and all that. And so not only did we read the reviewers' comments, but we worked hard to get it in 4 weeks early so that it could go to a reader. And the person who read it, she did an excellent job of finding more mistakes. And so we did that part too. So we followed the prescription as pretty close as possible. David Baltensberger also had gone to Washington and talked to some of the program leaders, so we had that base covered. And then I just want to finish off saying, you know, somebody has to be the orchestra leader, and you have to figure out a way to do it in a way that you don't get people pissed off. But everybody has 4 pages of stuff, and you really only need 3/4 of a paragraph or 3/4 of a page. You have to figure out a way to get everybody's piece in there, balanced, but not to overdo it and stay within the page guidelines. And so there's no great way to do that, I don't think, but somebody has to say, I think that's not sticking to the point. I think that's too much, too little. We need a reference here. But also the people who have skills, use them where you can. So with that, I'll take some questions. Yeah.
Speak up.
Was about the profitability of organic. Now, where are you from? I don't know a lot about a lot of different areas. There was a talk yesterday from, or maybe it was this morning, it's hard for me to remember what I hear when these days, but in Iowa there, they'd done some work where the organic farmers there and the transition were about at break even. I guess the, what we have some programs in the United States now that NRCS and Equip Money to give them some incentive to in that transition period. That's about, I don't know, $40, $50 an acre. We haven't used that on our farm here. With being with the university, you know, we're not under the same gun to make money like a farmer is, like you're talking about. But we've tried to do things the way a farmer would do things. Now, one of the issues is getting that money when you do get certified so that you can sell the crops at that premium. And even though that doesn't help you in the transition period, you know, there are agricultural entities that take a while, you know, to get a payback, vineyards, orchards, things like that, that take many years before they're established. So there are, a lot of the farmers tell me, you know, you can't go to 300 acres at once. Let's say you can start transitioning a few acres, and then as that comes online, you could add, so your total income stream may not be as affected if you have enough land to do that. It is hard because you have all this equipment issues. In the western part of our state at Sydney, they started the organic transition a year before we did. So they were certified last year. I guess they must have done it 2 years, but they were certified in 2006. And they pulled out this summer 55 bushels of organic wheat. Now, my big disappointment was they sold it at the elevator for whatever regular wheat was, but if they had made the effort to market it, they would have gotten $12 or $15 a bushel instead of, what, $5 or $6 or whatever they did get. And so one of our challenges is on 23 acres, it's hardly worth it to sell 600 pounds of this, or, you know, we don't have the quantity to get those premiums, but if you are going to be a farmer and do this commercially, then, you know, it's really important. And we're going to try to sell the stuff and make the premiums. And earlier on, you know, 15 years ago, some of the organic farmers didn't even want the university to have certified land because they saw them as competitors. I think that thinking has changed now because the market is growing and they really need more organic farmers to meet the market. But so I don't have an easy answer for you, but you know, I think if you can get the money later, you could try to, you know, bridge the gap. Yeah.
Okay. Just so I'm clear, when number two is read closely the reviewer's comments. Now you only get these comments
after
you've failed or been accepted, right?
Yeah, I don't know if I have the comments from when we got accepted. Usually you get a phone call, you know, and then you don't worry what they care because they got the phone call. But we get them both times, yeah. I don't have them with me. But, yeah, you have to fail to get those comments.
So when you fail, of course, the reviewer's comments mean a lot. Now, right. If you do get the grant, I imagine they have a little less weight.
Well, I think they didn't give us quite the exact amount of money that we asked for, so you have to do some reworking sometimes of, you know, figure out what's most important or what you have to give up or what sometimes they tell you, I think you should not do this. But I got to admit, I don't remember exactly what the comments were the second time. But I did read through these pretty closely for the first time. And, you know, I had, you know, everything they said, 95% of it, they were right on. I don't have a complaint about it. Some of the things is harder to do. You know, if you want, they tell you to get a measurable impact, you know, sometimes you struggle. How do I measure the impact? What's the measurable impact? You know, sometimes it takes a lot of work to answer them, but, you know, it is a good idea to think them through. So, and, you know, I really don't think that one, well, let me back up. I've been in this business since 84, and essentially, I've come to the conclusion, if you have a good idea and you want to stick with it long enough, you'll find somebody to fund it. And if you don't have that great idea and your grant and your reviewers tell you it's not a great idea, you know, maybe it's time to go to a different idea. So you have to kind of figure out which side you're on, whether this is a great idea that needs to be developed or maybe, you know, no one else is thinking about that yet. You know, and I don't know what the answer is, but in our case, you know, this is only a case of one person. They said to make a broader view to get a little bit away from the, you know, the individualized inputs, and those are all valid. We just couldn't get it done the first time through. And sometimes it takes, you know, an outside reviewer to make, you know, if we're on a team together, it's harder for me to tell you that you're verbose, and, you know, but if the reviewer says it, then I got some backup, so.